program. Also, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle is making_contact. Again, I've been your host, Anita Johnson. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Judge Torres, running January 10th to 19th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Judge Torres is a modern-day fairy tale rooted in Salvadoran folklore. Xiomara Torres faces many obstacles in her turbulent journey crossing the border, maneuvering the U.S. foster care system, missing her family, aging out, and becoming the most recent Latinx judge in Multnomah County, Oregon. This is her story. Again, that's Judge Torres, running January 10th through 19th, weekly on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying her habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. Andrew Black will be our host today, and our guest is Dr. Susan Eyrick, who is the founder and director of Earthfire Institute, which is a very special sanctuary for animals located in Driggs, Idaho.
Welcome to the program, Dr. Eyrick.
Thank you.
Okay, well, let's hit the ground rolling. What are animals to you? Would you give our audience a clear definition of who and what animals are?
A clear definition of what animals are to me?
Yes, and just
probably,
give us our audience.
Yeah. It's probably not possible because it's so multi-leveled, and the levels of understanding I couldn't don't really fit into a clear dictionary definition. They're in my mind, mystical, spiritual, emotional, biological beings, basically, fundamentally, just like us. They have all the same emotions, fundamentally the same capacities, except for the capacity for abstraction, like math and those kind of things. Extremely high intelligence. More and more research shows how intelligent they are, all through the animal kingdom, actually, all through the natural world. In summary, they're fellow beings.
Okay, that's a wonderful definition. It didn't have to be clear. Okay, so the second question would be: give us your opinion on the treatment of animals currently in mainstream America, including the treatment of the majority of chickens, pigs, and cows that you know they apparently receive. What's your opinion on this?
The first thing you said, clear definition. The second one is an opinion. I'm not sure it's an opinion to see cruelty and understand it. It's not an opinion, it's an emotional, moral, spiritual understanding that harming another being is wrong to begin with, and harming it for money is close to obscene in order to treat them that way. Even if you're going to eat meat, you don't treat them that way in order to make more money and to be more efficient. It's one of the underlying corruptions of, it corrupts the soul. And I think a lot of people who do that have deep emotional problems as a result. There's a story I heard once from a rabbi about killing chickens, no matter how they were raised, but killing chickens for the community in a kosher way. And they understood that no matter how much you tried not to be brutalized, if you killed lots of chickens, you basically would be. And the person, I think, I'm not Jewish, so I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but I think it was called a shoychit, the person who was designated to do the killing. And he was supposed to say prayers every single time he did it. Don't let this corrupt my soul. Don't let this brutalize me. And the community kind of set it aside so it wouldn't brutalize the community. It's profoundly disruptive to anything in the line of life.
Yeah, I believe that. Well, most of us that are most of our audience would agree with you, and a lot of people, and a lot of KBOO members and us hosts, we would agree with you. It's a very painful thing to watch, or to just know that we're part of. The third question is more than a question. It's kind of like something that the first animal that connected me to the animals was a Siamese cat born in 2011. He has become my personal ally, and I couldn't imagine myself separate from him. What was your first animal? Please describe your connection to this animal and how old you were and how your life changed after that. And please, if you could speak close to the microphone so we can hear you perfect. Yeah.
Well, I always loved animals ever since I can remember coming into consciousness. And I remember having a discussion with my mother when I was 7 or 8 or 9, maybe younger, about why animals didn't have equal rights to humans, because it didn't make sense to me. So I always loved them. But my parents didn't let me have pets. So the first animal I actually had was a cat. It was a scrawny little kitten that crawled onto a farm where I was getting my PhD in Kentucky. It probably had been thrown out of a car. And I loved all animals. I didn't have a special connection to cats. And within a few hours, that cat was sitting on my chest purring, and I was just gone in love. It was the deepest love I'd ever known. I have no idea what happened, why it happened. I only know that it opened me, and that was maybe 30 years ago. And it's like it's been a constant opening since then. So that was the very first one. The second one were 7 wolf puppies. And that basically destroyed my life as I knew it, and were the basis of my founding Earth Fire Institute.
Yeah, I feel the same. When my connection to my cat before he came into my life, I didn't really have an awareness of animals, and he opened myself up for that. And now it's a whole different story. So, what was your trigger to create the Earth Fire Institute? Briefly tell us. If you could tell us what the Institute aims for and how it goes with achieving it.
Those are 3 different questions. What the trigger was, the 7 wolf puppies. An acquaintance of mine used to train animals for movies, and he had 7 wolf puppies that he had rescued and needed to raise, and he asked if I would help me raise them. And I'm not quite sure how you would say no to something like that, so I didn't. And holding those little puppies, they all got really ill. And holding those little puppies against my chest as I was bottle feeding them and giving them IVs and trying to help them survive just was incredibly profound. I began to feel who these beings were, as wolves, as individual wolves, and they were so exquisite on every level, the passion to live, all of it, that I said, I can't keep this experience to myself. I've got to share with other people who these are, these 7 wolves, who wolves are. And from there it became clear that this is fundamentally true of any animal you get to know deeply. You with your cat, me with my cat, me with these wolves, and then with a bear and a cougar. It's getting to know another being deeply that the magic happens. And I wanted to share with people the magic that's available to us out there, all of us, everywhere. If we connect deeply with anything, it could even be a tree. And I shouldn't say even a tree because I don't mean to denigrate trees, but I think when you connect with a tree and admire it and think it's beautiful, I believe it begins to glow. And I don't really think this is mystical. I think it's simply the nature of the universe that life recognizes and enjoys life. So that was the underlying feeling for why I wanted to start Earthfire. I wanted to share this beauty with other people.
Yeah, wonderful. I think that's what I thought you would say. Are you aware of the relationship between animals and people traditionally among Native American people? If so, have you ever been inspired by it?
It's not an area of expertise for me, and I think I'm not sure it's good to generalize to all Native people. It might be different with different types of Native people. But it's not actually an area of expertise. It's more like I've discovered this as a white person. It was interesting. I was giving a talk last year, and I was sharing some stories about how a wolf we had responded to energy work with a complete stranger and healed herself. That's actually a film on YouTube called Energy Healing Wolf, and you can see her responding and going into a deep healing trance and healing. And that led to more. So I thought, wow, this is really interesting. I adored that wolf. Her name was Moonbeam. I didn't want her to die. Actually, it was Apricot. I didn't want her to die. Ordinary medicine couldn't do anything for her. So I just said, what else can I do? And I asked someone who worked with human nervous systems using energy medicine. And this wolf responded incredibly and healed. And I thought, wow. And then I tried it with another wolf. And then I tried it with a cougar. And it worked every time. So I began developing from experience and my own understanding, not that this is better or richer, but simply that it's, you know, my own actual experience of how these animals respond and how they respond beautifully. And then they start to respond on many other levels other than healing. So when I was giving this talk, someone said, you know, you're talking about the way Native people have a relationship. I said, I don't know if I am or not, but I do know that I need to be talking to white people about our relationship, because we're the ones who are destroying the world.
Yeah, that's a really great point. So please tell us if you think you've succeeded at changing people's hearts and minds when it comes to understanding, accepting, and caring for animals. Like, how can you tell when you do?
I don't know if I succeeded in changing anyone. I think most of the people who come here are already so inclined. What I can do and have done is deepen and enrich and widen their understanding when they come here for retreats, or when I do the writing on my website, all the many stories, and I get lots of feedback from people about how it expanded their understanding of a connection to nature. The fact that we could have communication and connection with any living being, that's been fairly widespread. Sometimes they'll burst into tears, sometimes they'll write back. But as you know, emotions aren't verbal. You can try and put them into words, and experiences aren't verbal. So it's a difficult thing to answer, but that is the intent of my work, to help people expand and connect to the beauty that's around them for our sake as humans and for the sake of the world, because if we have that connection, we'll treat it differently.
Yeah, given the work of thousands of caring and committed people like yourself throughout the world who fight daily to help and protect animals, and seeing that this number keeps rising and awareness of life of animals keeps growing on social media, blogs, and websites, do you think our society will at some point in the future give the animal kingdom rights and privileges under law?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. I'm glad you were able to answer that just so quickly. That's all I needed. Okay, many studies published by reputable, well-known institutions such as NASA, for example, have predicted that unless some major political change takes place, the planet as we know it is bound to experience an exponential catastrophic decline around the year 2050. What steps would you suggest to people who want to do their little part in preventing this dire dystopia from ever taking place?
The first thing is, we actually don't know much about anything. Therefore, there's no point in being depressed. You might as well be optimistic and simply do what you can. So part one is not to give up hope, because we don't know enough. We have no idea what's going to happen. But I do think it's critical for each of us to do our own honorable part to the best we can. And somehow, if a lot of us do that, sort of like the movement you just talked about, now pretty soon we're going to have legal rights, because people have been working with that for a long time. And one guy started this really years ago, asking, do trees have standing? And then a guy called Stephen Wise started a lawsuit about a chimpanzee, and the judges laughed at them, and the people barked at him, and now it's a huge worldwide movement. There was one person who started the whole idea of wildlife corridors. The fact that animals need corridors with which to move, and how we have to change. This is some things people can actually do, how we can change our planning and zoning so we don't, with mindlessly, without realizing it, deprive the animals of food or water or passageways. There's one little animal called a pine marten that won't cross anything larger than 400 yards, so we cut them off. And now there are wildlife corridors around the world. One person who had an idea that was in the air and began to express it, and other people understood. So we have enormous power as an individual person. We just don't know that. Most of us are made to feel helpless by feeling overwhelmed. But if we spend time with ourselves or with like-minded people or in nature and really tune into our own, for lack of a better word, greatness or wisdom, we can find our own way. Actually, I have conservation conversations once a month online to help people, and when I say people, that include myself, begin to understand that we have tremendous power, and we never know what little thing we might do that might grow. And we can work on an activist level, we can work on a political level, we can work on a legal level, we can work on an artistic level. My own way is to try to work on a fundamental sort of psychological level to help people feel the connection. Because I think if we don't change fundamental perceptions, oh, it's just a tree, I'll cut it down. Oh, it's just a tree, it's dollars. Oh, it's just a tree, it's in my view. Or it's just a chicken. Whatever it is. Once we begin to change our perception that this is another fellow living being created by something much greater than us, whatever it is, whether you believe in God or spirit or whatever, we didn't create it. So what right do we have to take its life away? So the underlying question there is, how do we see other life? So my work is to try and help people see it differently. And as you asked me earlier, how can I tell when people have opened their hearts some? Well, that's part of the process, that you begin to see it differently, then you treat it differently. That's my work. But we need the legal work. We need the political work. We need the beginning to try and change the cultural view of things. And however we do it, be it by forming a small discussion group, by whatever it is, we can find our own way in small groups or on our own. The particular practical awareness, for instance, of what's happening to wildlife with climate change and the fact that we're cutting out every passageway for them with our bridges and our roads, and something like 20% of the earth is covered with roads. And every little development wants to put in another road. And there's a little bit of green space. Let's put another road there. And there's a little meadow. Oh, I can put a house there. Wait a minute. There's other life living there. It's not just naked for us to take. So beginning to change perceptions, however we can do that, and not hysterically. It doesn't work to be hysterical. Either way, it works to be clear and heart-centered and not necessarily look at the other as the enemy, but to try and connect with them at a different level. Otherwise, the energy just goes back and forth with anger and not much really gets done.
Yeah, wonderful answer. I think I agree with you entirely. And I got to tell our audience here for this number one animal show at KABU 90.7 FM Portland, Voices for the Animals, that, well, you know, it really warms my heart to talk to people that care so much about animals. And it inspires me, and it really does. It really keeps me going every morning to know that so many people are doing incredible things with their time. So the next point is similar to the last point. It's many well-funded scientific studies have concluded the planet works as a massive system. In such a model, a destruction of most of the rainforests would push the planet to literally malfunction at a global scale, causing a reconfiguration that would most likely eliminate the ability of most people and animals to continue to exist. What do you think of this, and what would you tell anyone who is listening and wishes to be part of the global movement to do what's right?
There's a very good organization called the Pachamama Alliance that works specifically for rainforests, and they're quite powerful. And Pachamama is a Quechua word for earth, and it's P-A-C-H-A-M-A-M-M-A, Pachamama Alliance. So for the rainforest specifically, they're pretty effective. And there are quite a few. There's a Rainforest Alliance. You can go online and start to look at some of these groups and see how effective they are and see if you want to join some of them. The other thing is, that's essential really, is to pay great attention to what we buy and to where things come from. Every single piece of paper comes from a living tree that was actually a living community. when you cut down that tree, you didn't just cut down the tree, you cut down all the connections under the ground, all the other beings living in it. Every single thing we use from the earth comes from another living thing. And to use everything we have mindfully, not use any more than we need to pay attention, this is something people can definitely do, to pay attention and trace where it comes from. And then perhaps in a small community group of your own, discuss, okay, I'm going to track paper, I'm going to track plastic, I'm going to track strawberries from Chile. What does it mean to eat strawberries from Chile? Do we really need to have strawberries in the middle of winter? Can we live more simply? So Voluntary Simplicity, there's a great book by that called, by Duane Elgin, Voluntary Simplicity. And the irony is, all the stuff we do and all these conveniences don't make us happy. We're destroying the earth and it doesn't even make us happy. But if we live very simply and in tune and do not waste anything, it actually makes us happy. So it's win-win-win all around.
Yeah. So the work of thousands of nonprofit organizations around the world and the fact that the internet allows for all information to be available, there are many people who rest assured the earth will not continue to decline, but actually reverse in its entirety during the next 30 years. What do you say to people who believe this, and what do you think your work in the Institute does to support this notion of a new age, if you wish, that many people are confident is very slowly taking place throughout the planet?
I don't know how to deal with stuff that isn't fact-based. All I can do is say is that we try to create a counterforce.
A counterforce?
Of sanity.
Okay. All right. What about if you tell us, I don't know, I don't think you did, or maybe you did, but what about if you tell us the most endearing and unforgettable experience you have had so far in your relationship to animal beings throughout your career?
Simply not possible to pick one. But I will tell you one very profound one.
Okay.
So Earthfire is a wildlife sanctuary, and we have animals that are native to our area. We're near Grand Teton National Park in Yellowstone. So we have bears and wolves and other animals like that. And we had two bear brothers who'd lived together, black bear brothers, who'd lived together for many years. And in winter, they'd sleep arm in arm. They'd fight like brothers, but they'd sleep arm in arm. And then one was called Major Bear and one was called Huckleberry Bear. And Major Bear got ill. And we have no idea what happened. We brought him to a special hospital in Washington State. Nobody could do anything. And eventually he passed away, and Huckleberry was left alone. And a couple of years later, during a retreat we had, for a long retreat for 3 weeks for students who were art students, for some reason one of these girls was driven, not driven, was drawn to sit in front of Huckleberry in his enclosure. And this is a girl from L.A. who was an art student and a drama student. She had no idea about animals really, except that she kind of liked them. And she was a very good artist. And suddenly she began to feel really sad. She said, this is strange. And then she discovered tears running down her face. And she said, this is really strange. And then she sort of heard, not voice, but they got the impression in her head, I miss my brother. And she said, this is even weirder because I don't have a brother. And that night around a campfire, when people are able to say things they're too embarrassed during the day, she asked us if Huckleberry had a brother. She didn't know that he'd lost his brother. This bear was communicating his grief across species to a woman who was sitting there simply open, because she didn't expect anything, she wasn't blocked from it either. It just hit right into her heart.
Wow. Yeah, this is interesting because the very next question that I have on my list, the next point is, I think it's very similar to what you just said, but I'll go along and read it. In Native American lore, it is said animals possess the same unique identities, consciousness, and value we humans pride ourselves to have. It is said animals possess souls and are able to have complex knowledge passed generation to generation and also stored from birth, and they're able to communicate this knowledge through means that most people have forgotten. Do you agree? And if so, please tell us of an experience where you saw this in your life.
I think it's entirely possible. I'm not an expert at these things, and this is not an area that I have direct experience in. But I think there's much, much more magic and mystery than any of us can comprehend. And because I haven't experienced that kind of level, doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Okay. I personally have started feeling an abnormal connection to animals since a few years back. And today I find myself incapable of ignoring or not caring for animals. I talk to them and have accepted they communicate to me. Have you seen this behavior in other people throughout your career?
No, you're really weird.
Okay. Fair enough.
No, I'm sorry. Yes. The more we get connected, the more profound the connection is. And from an outside point of view, it can look strange to people who haven't had that kind of deep connection.
Yeah. When I said abnormal connection is because I'm used to people, pretty much everybody I know, not have that sense of connection to, for example, common animals like crows, squirrels, animals that we see every day here in town. So that's why I think it's abnormal, and I've accepted it's just how it is.
And my reaction to that is they're missing a lot of magic in life, magic and nurturance and sustenance and calming and healing. They're missing that by being so cut off. And it's not their fault. It happens to us as children. It happens to us through the pressure of our culture. But it's a tragedy.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I'm just really blessed. I think at least once a week, I recognize that I'm really lucky to live in a place like Portland, because although it's a big city with, you know, pavement everywhere and buildings everywhere and noise, I can still see just right outside my door, I'm going to see squirrels all over. I'm going to see crows. I'm going to see doves. Raccoons at night that come also. So there's so much wildlife, and I feel that other people throughout the country and the world, they live in places where these, you know, they just don't have the opportunity to experience animals in any way. So I think this could be our last question maybe, but please tell us how people can help your organization, a website, a way to donate, to get involved, to help your organization grow.
That's nice, because we're pretty small. We're a seed center for ideas. We are a sanctuary. One major way is to look at our website, earthfireinstitute.org, and let other people know about it. We don't have that larger readership. There are tons of wonderful videos and stories. We are a nonprofit, and we're only supported by donations. So it's a constant struggle month by month, because it costs a lot to feed bears and wolves and bison, etc. So any donation is really appreciated. And spreading of our mission, which is to share how incredible other life is and to connect with it, and letting other people know about us, putting links on your own websites or emails, that'll all be very helpful.
Okay, so everybody just go to earthfireinstitute.org, earthfireinstitute.org, and just check it out and help as much as you can. And lastly, we have about 30 seconds. Just in 30 seconds, give us words of encouragement and inspiration as to the relationship of human and animal beings and how it is a good thing to do the right thing.
I think the animals are calling to us for help, and they're calling to us because they realize we're in trouble, and I think they're actually trying their best to help us, have us listen, and they have tremendous wisdom. A quickie, Earthfire is the name of one of our wolves, the founder of the Institute. I think the animals are calling to us. I think they're calling us to counsel. If we could listen, I think there's tremendous wisdom and hope there.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I am honored to be able to speak to you and everybody here, all the audience that tunes in monthly for Voices for the Animals are going to be are very happy right now, I'm sure. So thank you so much for your work.
And thanks.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks from Ender and Dab Stedman to all of you for listening to Voices for the Animals today. To hear our past programs, just go online to kbu.fm and look for us under Audio Programs. And please plan to tune in again on the fourth Monday of next month. Until then, remember that you too can be a voice for the animals.
KBOO Community Radio is requesting proposals for a grant writer to provide ongoing grant writing services and application support. This is a one-year contract position for 200 hours, compensated at $25 an hour. Proposals must be submitted electronically to Delphine Crescenzo, station manager at Dell, that's D-E-L, at KBOO.FM. Proposals are due Friday, January 4th at 5 p.m. Responsibilities, background information, the scope of work, and proposal requirements can be found at KBOO.FM/grantwriter2018.
KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBOO has been showing up for over 50 years. Give to KBOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten-Free Gem, Wii Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032. Support KBOO, where music makes the movement.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Stand by for the Christmas time jamboree. Merry Christmas!
Hi, this is Charlie McCoy. I'm happy that you've invited me to share the holidays with you.